In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby.
Let us talk films. We do it every Monday with Alan Adams of The Main Edge. Pass the Popcorn, brought to you by Bangor Mall Cinema 10, where they have a film for everybody in the family. 557 Stillwater Avenue in Bangor. Welcome, Mr. Adams.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to be here.
We were chatting about your weekend. You were getting married. No, you weren't getting married. You were watching someone else get married.
That's right. The friend of Sheridan and myself, he and his wife actually got married back in December, but it was a sort of courthouse justice of the peace kind of situation, and they wanted to do a bigger, broader celebration, and so they came up here. They did it in his sister's backyard. There were like 50 people there. It was great. It was a lovely little time, and it was. It's always nice when you go to a wedding and the bride and groom seem to genuinely like each other. You don't always get that.
No, you don't.
So it was one of those things where it's like, oh, this is great. I'm the gentleman in question, not known for his expression of emotions. And so to see him so just plainly, baldly happy was just, it was just one of those things where it warms the cockles of your heart,
nice,
as they say. There was an inflatable obstacle course. It was like,
as part of the wedding ceremony,
dude, it was like one half was like this sophisticated garden party. And then the other half was like a Dave and Buster's. Like it was like, there was like an inflatable obstacle course, like a Papa Shot thing, cornhole. I'm just like, and so you just walk back and forth. It's like, here's a delicate finger sandwich. Here's me scraping my elbow on the inside of an inflatable race course while I'm trying to beat my wife.
Man, that didn't sound,
that didn't
good.
Sound exactly, but you know what I meant.
I do.
In a race.
In a race.
it was a super good time, the happy couple continue to be happy.
You'll appreciate this. I got a letter from the city asking me something about the makeup of my water pipe.
Which was an answer you immediately knew off the top of your head, yeah.
What's your service line made of? Is it galvanized? And I was wondering why they were asking, and so I put it up on Facebook, and did you see who I heard from?
I did not.
Eric Roy.
Of course. Well, that makes sense. He knows about these things.
Right. And Mr. Water Quality Expert.
That's right. I hope you got the information that you wanted, needed.
I did, and I didn't. And he actually said, because he's such a good guy, we'll take a picture and post it, and I'll tell you what it is.
Yeah.
Because I don't know.
Yeah.
We figured it out.
That sounds right. And everything is as it should be?
Yes. Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, I'm glad to hear that.
I don't have to spend any money, so that's good.
That is the best case scenario when it comes to those sorts of things.
And, you've been dealing with plumbing issues lately. You know
what? Yes. It's just like, it's a bunch of nonsense, Rich.
Yeah. I agree.
I don't even know why we got rid of the outhouses.
Right. Once you start moving that stuff inside, things get tricky.
Outhouses and rain bucket showers. Like, we don't need to go to do anything beyond that.
By the way, inspired by you, I've told you this. You had a great review, the cover story on Sarah Parsak's book, Archaeology from Space. She's going to be on with us Thursday. And boy, that book is fun.
Oh, she's real smart, man.
And she's funny.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. And that's one of the... one of the trickier parts of writing this sort of popular science book is you have to find that balance between writing as education and as entertainment. And she does a great job of sort of walking that line. It's like she said in the interview, she's like, I'd look around and feel like, I'd spent a couple of pages getting pretty heavy, so time to drop a dad joke in there, which she is unafraid to do.
Oh yeah. That's great.
But yeah, no, it's a phenomenal book. It's always nice to be able to support local folks made good.
No question about that. All right, let's talk movies. One big one, everybody's talking about it. Tarantino back with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Sounds like an epic.
Oh. Well, full disclosure, I ride pretty hard for Quentin Tarantino. And I acknowledge that there are many problematic aspects of his work, his life, both professional and personal. Like, I acknowledge all of that stuff. I've been in the bag for Tarantino ever since I saw Pulp Fiction as an impressionable, college freshman. And it was just like, oh, what? what is this? What is this that I'm watching? I didn't, are you allowed to do this? And I would argue that Tarantino is probably as influential figure on the subsequent quarter century of popular culture as any filmmaker maybe has ever been. You're talking about like George Lucas levels of influence, like Steven Spielberg levels of influence, like very different kinds of influence. But in terms of the impact that they've made on both the culture and how it's consumed, I don't think anyone is as important a figure in that sense as Tarantino over the last 25 years. Certainly no one is more influential. You could maybe argue if you wanted to throw Paul Thomas Anderson at me or something like that, it's like, okay, I'll listen to you. You're probably still wrong, but I'll listen to you. ostensibly the ninth film from Mr. Tarantino. Like he gets a little dodgy with the math sometimes. He counts Death Proof, which was half of Grindhouse, as its own movie, but he also counts both volumes of Kill Bill together as one movie. Okay. And so we are at nine, apparently.
Ish. Yeah.
Yeah. I go with ish. The only reason it matters is because he claims that he's doing 10 and then he's out. So that means there's one more after this one. If this does turn out to be his penultimate movie, it makes a lot of sense. It's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is easily his most sentimental movie because he's turning the lens shaped by he's examining the popular culture of the late 1960s through a lens that was shaped by the popular culture of the 1960s. Right. That's his wheelhouse. That is the stuff that made him fall in love with the movies. And for him to address that time with the tools that he's developed in the years since, it's fascinating. First of all, it's a phenomenal movie. We'll get that out of the way right now. It's an absolutely phenomenal movie-going experience, despite the fact that there are so many strikes against it in a lot of ways. It meanders, it's like 2 hours and 45 minutes long. But that's, that's sort of been Tarantino's MO for the past, certainly for the past decade or so, where he makes movies that sort of go beyond the sort of acceptable lengths that we tend to look at these movies with. There's not a whole lot of story to speak of. It's very day in the lifey, despite the fact that it covers about 8 months of time. For those who are unfamiliar, the sort of ostensible backdrop, it's 1969 in Hollywood. The sort of framing device is the Manson family murders. Sharon Tate, the actress, who was murdered in August of 1969 by followers of Charles Manson. But it's not really about that, although Sharon Tate, played by Margot Robbie, plays a pretty significant part in the film, but in a way that's difficult to describe. The real star of the movie is Rick Dalton, played by Leonardo DiCaprio. He's the former star of a television western called Bounty Law that ran for 5 seasons in the late 50s and early 60s. He bailed on the show to try to make a movie career and failed.
Oh, so he's Purnell Roberts.
You know what I mean? And so so he's basically left sort of in his house in the Hollywood Hills, basically serving as a day player on various westerns, basically being the heavy that gets beat up by the guy in whose saddle he rode just a few years earlier. And alongside him, every step of the way, is his driver / assistant / drinking buddy / Man Friday, Cliff Booth, played by Brad Pitt, who is just devastatingly cool as always. It's basically the two of these dudes just wandering around Los Angeles. Cliff basically drives Rick, and so he drives Rick to the set of Lancer, where he plays the bad guy on an episode of Lancer,
which starred Bangor, Maine native Wayne Maunder,
right, who is played in this by the late Luke Perry.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
That's cool.
And the star, Jim Stacy.
James Stacy, yeah.
Played by Timothy Oliphant.
Wow.
It's the whole movie is that like is, that.
I didn't know that part about that. Yeah. Now I have to see it.
Oh, and we spend like 45 minutes like on the set of Lancer. Like where we go like we film scenes and like he interacts with the director and with a child actor who's a delightfully precocious in a very scene-stealing kind of way. Oliphant's in it. Luke Perry. He had, DiCaprio has a one of the most magnificent movie star trailer breakdowns that you'll ever see in your life. Like all this like dropped in the middle of the movie is like a 45 minute meditation on the making of Lancer.
Wow.
Like it's such a Tarantino move. Like he's literally the only guy in Hollywood who could do something like that and make it, but it works. It works because DiCaprio so fully commits to the bit. Meanwhile, you've got the Tate connection. Roman Polanski and Sharon Tate, who are recently married, move into the house next door to Rick Dalton. So they're his next door neighbors. He hasn't met him yet, but he knows that they moved in, and he's sort of interested because it's like it's Polanski, and he's like, I want to be in a Polanski movie. Like that would be a great way to sort of reinvigorate my career. But they're sort of operating in parallel. There's not really a lot of crossover between the Rick and Cliff story and the Sharon Tate story. We actually follow her around a little bit. We spend a little time with her actually in the movie theater watching The Wrecking Crew.
Oh, wow.
The movie she was in with Dean Martin. Yeah. Like it's her like basically seeing herself on the big screen for the first time and like sort of, basking in the laughter and all that stuff of people reacting to her performance, which is... it's a wonderful sort of, sidebar. Plus, you've got the whole Manson family thing, which is awesome in so many ways, not least because Tarantino, in another awesome Tarantino thing, does this wonderful thing where a lot of the members of the family are the actors are the children of famous people.
Oh, wow.
So he's got that sort of new Hollywood vibe, yeah. While he's also got like guys like Bruce Dern and Kurt Russell in parts, to represent that sort of old Hollywood. So he has this generational thing that's happening, and it's just, and I know it sounds like I'm sort of jumping around because, well, that's what the movie does. And that's kind of it. Like there's some intersection. Cliff winds up picking up a hitchhiker who goes by the name of Pussycat. Played by Joanne Qualley, who I'm not super familiar with. She's actually Andy McDowell's daughter.
No, okay.
but was just phenomenal, magnetic in this role, and she's actually done a couple of pretty impressive things, down the way, and is gonna be a movie star, I think. Like that's the kind of the vibe you get from her. But she basically hooks up, Cliff gives her a ride to the Spahn Ranch, which is where the family live. Nice. And Bruce Dern plays, George Spahn, which is the scene that,
wow.
But yeah, the fan, it's like, Dakota Fanning is Squeaky Frome, what's her name? Lena Dunham shows up as a member of the family, like just all these people, and it's just all poured together. And that's where I'm going to stop because, again, like I could go on and on about various details, but just know that things are going to intersect in a particularly brutal and visceral way, a la the standard Tarantino treatment. Though I will note that it's probably the least violent Tarantino movie that I've seen. I mean, when that stuff happens, it's as graphic as advertised, but you don't get nearly as much of it as you've gotten in some of his past work, which I think is interesting. I think there's a softness around the edges of this movie that I think comes from his genuine sentiment towards the time that he's representing, and it's really a fairy tale, like right from the title, Once Upon a Time. Like it's really,
which is interesting. How old is Tarantino? He's not 60, is he?
Yeah, he's in his 50s, I think, mid 50s.
Okay. Very little memory of that time period for him.
Yeah, like I want to say, yeah, because he was born in like 1963, okay. I think. So he was
6 years old.
Yeah, so he was a kid. Probably some of his formative like pop cultural memories are inexorably tied up with that sort of with the the Tate murders, mm-hmm. like the Manson family tragedy. There are a lot of things that I want to say about this movie that I can't in good conscience say on the radio. But I can talk about how just magnificent the performances are in this movie. I think this very well might be the best work that Leonardo DiCaprio has ever done.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's saying a lot.
Yeah. Like, and this is a dude with a history of some great performances. He's never been this vulnerable. He's never shown this kind of willingness to subvert the idea of fame. It's a very emotionally fraught performance. And it's the sort of thing that I think we always knew that he could do, but I don't think he ever felt like he could. Like that's there's a lot of fame presents a lot of obstacles when it comes to being someone who pursues the craft of acting. And it's funny that it took DiCaprio this long to get there, because I think maybe of any actor of his generation, Pitt was someone who was able to kind of do that and kind of just be like, yeah, okay, so I'm a movie star and I'm crazy handsome, but yeah, now I'm going to be an incomprehensible, Welsh boxer, or, Billy Bean, or like he's one of these guys who's willing to sort of think outside the box. And it's funny because in a lot of ways, Cliff is basically a distillation of those sort of charming grifter types. The one that immediately leaps to mind is, I think it was Rusty in the Ocean's 11 movies. Yes. Like that part, yep. Like it's that charm only sort of poured into the body of a sort of failed stuntman, which has its pathos in and of itself. But he's great. He's going shot for shot with DiCaprio, and they're just, the two of them together are just phenomenal. There was some controversy surrounding Margot Robbie's portrayal of Sharon Tate, specifically the fact that, as written, she doesn't actually say a lot. She's got a fair amount of screen time, but she doesn't have a ton of dialogue. And that's accurate. That is an accurate representation of how she is portrayed in the film. But it doesn't matter. Like, there's a wonderful energy that she brings to the screen, and like a sort of physicality, like a wide-eyed physicality. And so you get this wonderful sort of juxtaposition of, the sort of ascendant star who, looks around and can't really believe what's happening yet. Like, and it's just sort of swept up in the magic of Hollywood. And then you've got this other sort of falling star who's already, seen what it's like, behind the curtain, and is left to struggle with viewing it as, what's my next move? Do I keep doing day player stuff, or do I do what my agent asked me to do? An agent played by Al Pacino, by the way.
Really?
Yep.
Wow.
do I do what my agent wants me to do and go to Italy and make spaghetti westerns for 6 months or whatever? And and it's just like to see the contrast between those two, equally, sort of prevalent Hollywood dynamics, to see them sort of laid out side by side like that, it's really fascinating. Again, one could argue that this movie could be half an hour shorter. Didn't feel that long, honestly. And again, this is just coming from someone who's very much in the bag for Quentin Tarantino. So, take that with a grain of salt. But I was absolutely just delighted from beginning to end. The sentimentality was there while still, embracing that sort of rapid fire, referential dialogue. And the soundtrack is amazing, because I don't think Tarantino is capable of making this kind of movie without an awesome soundtrack. He uses music as well as any filmmaker currently going, integrating it into the proceedings in a very sort of full way. There's a lot of verisimilitude to the way he does it. He just has a knack for building these worlds and creating these people to live in those worlds. And you just want to spend some time there and hang out with these people, yeah. despite how, you know, reprehensible some of them might be. Yeah, it's just an absolutely phenomenal movie. Got his best opening ever, and deservedly so. Like, I think the conversation about Best Picture can start now.
Nice. Well, and I appreciate him releasing it in the summer.
Yes.
Too. In the midst of blowing stuff up and comic book movies.
Well, and the reality, it's like you get one every 3.5 or 4 years, and you know, it's I don't know that there are any of auteurs of that type whose movie releases are events anymore. But he's one of those guys. Like, it's, you know, Tarantino can open a movie.
There you go. All right, thank you, Alan.
My pleasure.
Alan Adams of the Main Edge, talking movies. Pass the popcorn. Brought to you by Bangor Mall Cinema 10, Stillwater Avenue in Bangor.